Hey everybody, what's going on? Nate here. We did another live show today, so this is going to be me just in the beginning, giving you the information you need before we jump into the live part of the show. The live part of the show today is only going to have Rob and Mike Howerton. So a little, geez, cats, get out of here, I'm trying to record. This is why I always have my door closed when I do podcasts, because my cats are psychos. Anyways, before I was so rudely interrupted, busy time, and it was kind of last second. We are in between the VG Battle of the Sexes qualifiers and playoffs, so there was not a lot of time that I decided for making this show. It was kind of last second. Those were the only two people that we could get on, so this is, I guess, I don't know, a little bit of a show in the making. There's been a lot of stuff going on in the industry that we haven't been able to get around to because I've been working hard on getting the VG stuff done for the Battle of the Sexes. Hopefully some of you guys have been tuning in and enjoying it. If you haven't and you were not aware of it, it is happening on the Cue It Up Network Facebook page. We start up again on the 28th, so that's I guess 5 days from right now. Tune in if you would like. It's a pretty good time. Lots of great players in it. We'll talk about it slightly a little bit later, but neither here nor there. Let's get actually started with the announcements. And the only announcement I really have that I want to make is I have way too many apparel pieces, and I need to get rid of them, some of them. So I am running a big sale right now on Facebook, and you could always reach out to me in the website as well on how you want to get them if you are interested. But basically, we're doing all t-shirts are $20 and it's free shipping anywhere in the 48, Continental 48. And hoodies are, I guess, $35 with free shipping as well. And then we have a special, which is $60, and you can get yourself two t-shirts and a hoodie and a patch for $60. That's actually about a $90 deal. So pretty good deal right there. We're trying to get rid of some stuff. We were supposed to have two state tournaments this year. We only had one. And because of that, I ordered way too much apparel, thinking I'd have two opportunities to get rid of huge amounts of it. And it just didn't work out that way. So now I got to get rid of it online. So please, if you're interested in getting some Cue It Up swag, now is the perfect time. Help me get rid of this supply so I'm not sitting on 35 boxes of clothes in my house. All the ways to do so, you can always do Facebook, that's the easiest. You could also do Instagram, or you could do the actual website itself, cueituppodcast.com. All of those ways are possible, and we'll, I guess once you make contact, it'll be easy to get back and forth and get you guys your swag. So that's the only thing I really have to get out of the way in the beginning. Let's, I guess with that, jump right into the podcast.
I'm a real deal. I'll shoot your liver out and hand it to you. Except now when I hold up a spoon and I ask him what it
hey,
is, he goes,
I did it.
I don't know.
Good job.
I did it.
You'll get this tech thing down anyway, anytime.
I did it. I really did it, guys. I think I did it. I'm very average at this, to say the least.
Are you going
to
bring your cats into the picture today, Nate?
I think they're all sleeping in the other room, Rob. But yeah, well, to answer your question, Rob, we actually do have a full-time sponsor to this show now, and it is How Tips. I have the wrong logo up there right now. We have How Cues. Of course, it's the same brand, but we are going to actually have a full-time sponsor. What does that mean? That means that you guys are going to have some pretty cool opportunities to actually win stuff during this, so we'll be giving away some tips in the future for doing something. Whether it's sharing, whether it's partaking in comments, something, maybe all three of those, you will actually get a chance to win some How Tips in the future. So if you're listening to this as a recorded version, we need to get better about doing this at the same time every single week so that we can actually give you guys a real opportunity to tune in and win. But we're going
to
give...
Have you been to the How Tips school?
The hell is wrong with you, Rob?
Well, I don't.
What
I
even mean, is that?
I don't know. Is there one? I don't know. I was kind of asking. I just wanted to know. I was curious. I,
I'm pretending I'm, see what my job is on this podcast?
Being a clown?
pretend I'm a fan, right? And how would a fan, if a fan was on this podcast, what would they say? What would they do? That's the only contribution I can figure out I'm worth.
Yeah, right. That's a funny line, Eve. There is a bed hidden under all the merch from earlier. Yeah, this is so actually, before we even jump into what we're going to talk about today for pool, why don't I actually, we are actually running a special right now on some apparel, because I have a box right here that I'm trying to get rid of, and this is one of four boxes that I have. The other ones are out in my living room. But we're trying to get rid of some apparel because I have way too much. So what we're doing right now is a special. Free shipping in the continental USA, and you can get $20 t-shirts. So it's $5 cheaper plus free shipping. And we have very few hoodies left, but we do have hoodies for $35 shipped to the continental US. All we have left is small through large and then 1/4XL. And then we have the Cue It Up t-shirts, which are these, both in black, white, and then the multicolored ones like what Rob has on, as you can see. And then we have these silly shirts that are The Pool is a Beautiful Game Played by Ugly People by Earl Kinda. So we have lots of these as well, and we have a post out on the page.
Earl Kinda.
Basically saying what we have in stock and what we're trying to get rid of. So if you would like some sweet apparel for much cheaper than normal, so we can get rid of all this and either order more or just stop selling apparel for forever, please do so, so I can get rid of all my gear. All right, let's get talking about pool, guys. So since the last time that we actually did a live show, we had the Dennis and the Sky match up on the bar table, the race to 150, and that's what we're going to start with. So let me grab a fork so I can start eating some crow. Sky is the king. Sky is the absolute king of the bar box. And now, he didn't win big time. I mean, he didn't win convincingly. He won 150 to 145. And I guess it's regardless of how he won, he won. He's the bar box king. Rob, this, you said that this is the first stream that you've ever actually paid for in your entire life. And you got your money's worth. So
any pool. I've never paid to watch a pool, man.
So you tell us right now, what were your takeaways from the match?
Well, number one, I thought I was forced to watch it because I actually paid for it. So I wasn't just watching it to make a comment on the podcast, which was also a sideline. But, oh, yeah, I was at the end of it. I tried to think of anything about this match I did not like. Was there something about it I didn't like? I could not think of anything. Not one little tiny thing I did not like about it. So was it well worth what I paid for it? I thought certainly, easily. Now, was it difficult to watch that much pool for that long when I'm not used to it? Yes.
20 hours, something like that?
At least 20 I watched. You know, at 1, 2, 3 in the morning I was out. I wasn't watching that. But the next day I would catch up on it. So I did watch almost the entire match. What I saw early on, of course, Dennis got behind right away, day one. He was down. But I saw Dennis trying to play at the same pace that Sky was playing at, that in the first half of the first day. And it wasn't working for Dennis. He was missing shots that he never misses. And, of course, then he was 5-6 racks before he got back to the table. And I think on the bar box, that's what we're looking at. If you lose your turn, it's going to cost you between 4 and 8 racks of pool. And so you're going to be down that. Now you got to fight your way back. Dennis did a great job of that. I mean, all the times he came back, the times it was tied, the times he was slightly ahead, that interaction, that back and forth between these two guys on this bar table, that got my adrenaline going. Because you thought to yourself, is he going to be 10 games down? Is he out of it? No way.
I was constantly sweating it.
You're not out of it at 10 games down on that bar table.
I was constantly
not
sweating.
Anything like a big table, not anything. And then once Dennis kind of started to go at his own pace of play, which was still fairly quick, thank goodness. I mean, this was a fast 150. Then he started playing and got back in the match and then really made it a nice back and forth all the way. sweated match.
Yeah,
I couldn't have been happier watching it.
Yeah, sure. it was awesome. Mike, what was your takeaways from it?
Like Rob, I watched the whole thing. Spent 3 days, you know, making notes, and because I was trying to do daily write ups, which kind of goes to my one nitpick of it. I was trying to do daily write ups because it seemed to me like it was something that was deserving of being treated professionally. You know, these are two of the best players. This should be done professionally, which I have a couple of different thoughts about. There weren't a lot of moves. There weren't a lot of, you know, one player trying to quote unquote, get one over on the other one. But, you know, there were complaints about the rack. There were complaints about the break. That bothers me. I mean, these guys are both great players. Complaining about it and the possibility of it happening, it just made the whole thing seem less professional for that short period of time. You know, I realize we're talking 20 hours of pool, but with as much money as was on the line there and with the level of these two players, can we think about the idea of a neutral racker for these things? I mean, I don't want to do it for 20 hours, but it seems to me that somebody would certainly be willing to do a shift for a couple of hours who didn't have any money on it and who could do away with any of that.
I feel like the issue would then run into a lot of what gets stuck up with these matches, it's not about the spot or it's not about the handicap. It's not about, you know, the time frame. It's about the rack. Right. I mean, more. Right. I would say the rack kills more action from these little like matchups than anything else. You know, when you're talking one pocket, usually, you know, the players are really smart. You know, they know what they're trying to get. They know what they can get to win. They know what they can get to where they can't win. And they know about where the match is supposed to be, right? So the first time Tony and Chip played, it was 9-8. And now they're going to play again even. We'll talk about that in a little bit. The players know that. The players know what they need to do to make it 50-50-ish. You know, maybe they're trying to get themselves. They're really arguing over like 5% in their mind. You know, like, if I can get this one extra ball, I can get to 55%. And, you know, my opponent's got 45%. And that gives me a great advantage. My backers are going to like that, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's the racking that people like, well, nope, it's got to be one on the spot. Or nope, it's got to be 9 on the spot. Or nope, it's got to be, you know, template rack. Or nope, it's got to be, you know, wood rack. Or, you know, the corner pockets can't be so big because we really need to make this wing ball when we're working on the magic rack. It's so often the racking that kills these things because you throw somebody like Dennis Arcoyo or Sky Woodward on a bar box, they're going to miss a ball once every 10 games, something like that, give or take, on average. So
maybe
really,
more.
So really,
maybe one every 25 games.
Maybe. So really what it comes down to is how can I guarantee that the break, which is the only shot really in question, how can I guarantee that the break is going to be what I need it to be able to put giant packs together? It's a neutral racker. I feel like it just takes, and maybe it takes it away for both players so they're okay with it. But the idea that a neutral racker is going to be this fix-all that makes this game, you know, these matchups perfect and awesome, I just don't see it happening. I just don't.
It'd be something to try. You know, you could stick your neck out if you wanted to, if you were going to put on one of these shows and have somebody switch off racking the balls. Give it a try. See what happens. I like that philosophy that if you don't know whether something's going to work or not, you try it, and then you find out.
Yeah. What do you think to that,
I
Mike?
I like suggestions like that.
Well, you think about it. I look at it from a media standpoint. You know, that's kind of the hat that I wear for all of these things. And the story tells itself. I mean, you've got Sky Woodward, who's one of the best players in the United States, who has put out an open challenge to anyone in the world to play this game. And you have Dennis, who is known throughout the Philippines as the master or the king of these kind of gambling matchups. So you've got these two huge personalities that can come together and they're arguing about the rack and this 5% difference. You know, you think back to some of the interviews that Emily did from Matchroom, and she's talked about her her vision and her dream of the game being traded professionally. This match had everything that it needed to be viewed in that professional light, except for the racking. And I think if you can resolve that, you know, you really have something that you can promote and that will give Poole or can give Poole a positive look. You know, the match itself was great. It was amazing. I talked real briefly on it on the interview that I posted yesterday. You know, we all know that tournament players and action players are two different breeds. And, you know, if it comes down to one match, sure, player A can beat player B. But if they're going to gamble and just keep throwing, you know, playing time after time after time, well, then player B is going to outlast player A. But like a huge match like this, over that much time to watch the ebb and flow, and Dennis is going to break and run five. And oops, he missed. Now Sky breaks and runs five. And it just... The swings back and forth were amazing to watch. It really was a nerve-wracking thing to watch. I thought, and correct me if I'm wrong, Nate, because you watched more of these than I have. It seemed to me at the end, there was almost a time where Dennis kind of had felt like he had to go into hero mode. And he took on a couple of shots that I thought were real low percentage, but they had a chance to keep him at the table where he could theoretically run another four or five. I was surprised to see, you know, really him take a flyer on a shot like that. I realize it's kind of goofy to think a player of his stature is taking a flyer, but it sure seemed that way at the end.
Yeah, he did a little bit of that throughout the whole match when you saw him push out for jump shots. He did that quite a bit because he was thinking, Sky's not going to take this jump shot where I can take it. Might not be a high percentage make shot, but I'm going to take it because he's going to give it to me. And you saw that happening, and he did not make all those. Somebody pushed out to a pretty tough jump shot and did not make it.
But, and I think a lot of
this thing about, you know, they're bickering a little bit about some things during the tournament. That kind of stuff doesn't really bother me too much. I'm kind of thankful to see a part of the game that just isn't the mechanics of shooting a ball in the hole. There's a little more to it sometimes. Sometimes there's some personality in the game. Now, it may not be all that professional, Mike. I understand that, but it still is human. And so I'm not really affected, but I'm not in the media either. You are.
I think the marketing side of it is, it's a little goofy for where we're trying to get the game to go. Just to wrap up that point, I think Steve Hall here made a really interesting point in the comments. He said, with that much money being bet on it, how can you find a neutral racker, basically, is essentially what he's saying. You know, who didn't have a little bit on the rail from this? And, you know, I had a little bit on the rail. Just about every single person that I know had a little bit on it, at least of the people that are going to be interested in being there. And I've been in a room like that where I was in the room for Tony Choen and Dennis Arcoyo the first time that they played One Pocket, and everybody and their cousin in that room had something, whether it was game by game, whether it was inning by inning, whether it was the match as a whole, whether it was day one, day two, day three, everybody had something at some point pretty much. And is that the same case for this room? I don't know. But it, you know, you'd have to almost have somebody set up well in advance and far of the is in the negotiations of it, saying like, all right, well, if you're not if this is where we're at with the rack, then I want Lieutenant Gadget here to be the neutral racker. And, you know, Sky comes back with, all right, no, I don't like that. I want, you know, Mr. Bean being the neutral racker. And you get to the point where you find somebody that's, you know, you're negotiating literally, and then you end up with what is it, Wingball? What the heck's his the Moscone cup?
Wingball John?
Yeah, Wingball John. They both end up agreeing on Wingball John as their neutral racker. You know, maybe that's where we're at in these matches. If maybe that's something that they could look to for the future. Who knows? But
yeah, it wouldn't hurt.
Yeah, I guess. So my broad broad 50,000 foot view of the match. This is the second most entertaining match I think I've ever watched in my entire life. And the other one was 4 months ago with Dennis and Shane. I mean, these are it. I mean, the amount of pool that we are getting subjected to as a group, I'm 7 years old, so I'm gonna leave it to you, Mike, on this question. When in the world, since maybe the ESPN pool days, and I maybe not even then, when have you ever had this golden age of pool where we can watch matchups nearly every weekend or every week at this point, where they're this entertaining and they're this close and they're this great?
No, and it's been coming to this, you know, with all the streaming that goes on out there. There are multiple options for the average pool fan to watch at all skill levels every night of the week.
Yeah,
and it's Facebook and it's streaming.
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, there's a new amazing streaming company coming out, and I'll actually give a plug for one. And I need to get their logo and throw it on my screen just because I love the work that they're doing. Aaron's Pool Parlor. So Lil Chris is out there watching. Lil Chris, if you could do a homework assignment for me, grab their Facebook page and throw it up on the stream here. I mean, these guys are like taking pool and like they're just doing just stupid things with the game. They got like speed guns out there. They're looking into pocket cams so that you can get like an actual pocket view of the balls falling in. They have 28
years ago. That wealthy fella out there in New York who invited, I believe, 10 of the best three cushion billiard players in the world.
They put in pocket cams. Is that what they did?
And they had cams built in. He had a table built just for this purpose.
So he had pocket cams built into a billiard table. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah.
Is that what's going on?
Not in the pockets, but in the table. The cams.
Okay. All right. Now he's correcting himself.
The things that they're looking into doing over there, I think they have 28 different cameras from, or 28 different views from three high def cam. And they have like, I think by the end of it, he said he's going to have about $14,000 into this stream. And it started like, I want to say it started in August. So $14,000, I mean, when was AccuStats hasn't put $14,000 into their stream probably in 3 years.
Have. Yeah, they have.
No, I mean recently. Well, yeah, probably.
Okay, maybe not recently. Yeah. But yeah.
AccuStats is that's $150,000 production. I'm not questioning that. That production is on its own. That is the only thing that we have close to a professional production besides Matchroom and AccuStats is the only thing we have in the sport that's professional. But anyways, back on topic. I guess this is the most entertaining pool stretch that I've ever had in my entire career. Remembering watching this game for the 20, I'm 29 years old. I've been playing since I was 4. I really got into it about 10, so you know, 20 years nearly. This is it. This last year since the pandemic has been some of the most entertaining matchups. And of course, you can have these matchups still. Like, we had these matchups 5-10 years ago. But, you know, they just weren't this. The Moscone Cup has been getting entertaining again. Last year was a joke, but the World Pool Masters, the World Cup of Pool, stuff like that. Shane and Dennis and Sky, Chip and Tony. I mean, all of these matchups are just so fantastic that it's just, like you said, if you want to fix a pool, you can have a live fix a pool just about every single night and not even have to struggle to find it. It's I feel like we're coming into a golden age.
What did you think, Nate, about the prowess, the jumping prowess of these two players? We saw a lot of it in this matchup. And you being a very skilled jumper of the ball, what's your assessment? I thought it was fabulous, education on jumping.
Yeah, I mean, Sky jumps the ball super well. Dennis doesn't jump the balls all that great. But he's plenty proficient, right? He's not going to miss a jump that he's supposed to make for the most part. But he's not going to make a lot of those tweeners, you know, those like 50-50 jumps or, you know, maybe even a little bit lower than that. He's not going to make those. And it just seems like Sky makes every jump he's not supposed to make as well as every jump he's supposed to make too. It's kind of gross how good he jumps the balls as well as, you know, Fedor, of course, is in a world of his own. Don't give me anybody else. It's Fedor. And then it's the world when it comes to jumping the balls. I mean, that dude is just gross watching Fedor jump the balls. But, I mean, you just see so many players that are just jumping the ball so strong. It's you got to lock them. You know,
yeah,
it puts
I never appreciated that part of the game because I never liked jump cues.
Yeah.
I thought they were kind of gimmick things, but as things progress, they are here to stay. And in the tournaments there that you have them, that they're allowed, some aren't, but most are. It is definitely part of the game that's fascinating. Yeah. The way it's used and the moving of that particular part of the game. I kind of like that.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's wrap that up there. And now I want to talk about the future of this, right? Cause there's already discussions of a rematch. And why not? 150 to 145. I think Dennis left plenty of shots there out on the table. I don't think he brought his best game to the entire thing. And I think maybe it's because of a little... You touched on this earlier, Rob. It's hard to play against somebody who's that fast and that precise and that accurate while sprinting around the pool table. I mean, he's down on his shots sometimes, like regularly, where the cue ball's not even done moving. And he just kind of shifts his body into place when the cue ball finally stops resting. I mean, that's how fast Guy Woodward is playing this game. And I mean, Dennis is a fast player by all rights. I mean, he is quick. He does not waste time. But Sky's on a different... I mean, Sky is like... Sky is like Earl on the white, like on the white stuff in his prime. I mean, he's just all over the place, fast as it gets. It's entertaining, and I think Dennis tried to play Sky's game, and I think that's a bad idea for him. And that's what, you know, with that, it led to a 5-game disadvantage. And I think why wouldn't there be a rematch? Who do you think if they run it back today? Do you think the outcome is the same?
I do
think it's as close.
Yeah, close. But I think Sky's winning again.
I think so. Yep.
From what I saw.
If he plays best,
he don't even have to play any better than he played. Yeah. Just as good. And yeah. I think, yeah.
I mean, I would say that Sky played...
His game is totally intimidating. Yeah. I don't care who you are.
Sky played super, super strong. Dennis didn't quite play his top gear. I would say he played about his middle gear. There's more room for... Yeah. There's more room for Dennis to improve. But would he?
But I don't think we saw Sky's absolute A++ game. I think if Dennis improves, Sky improves with him.
Okay,
I totally agree with him.
That could be.
I see that all the way.
I don't even know.
Because you saw it as the game went back and forth. You saw that in these players. When they got to a certain point down, you saw another level of play take over in them and push them.
Oh, yeah.
Push them harder. They pushed themselves.
Towards the end there on day 3, when Dennis would come back to the table after Sky made a run, you could just see there. It was no nonsense. It was, this is my job. I'm getting down and running this rack. I broke. Nothing's tied up. I'm running out. And you know, like over the 3 days, you could see Sky try to make a push and he would speed up his game. And then it would seem like maybe he was going too fast and he would make an error. He'd slow it down. It was, you know, like I said, the ebb and flow over 3 days was amazing to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you see these guys, there was a 9-ball tournament not too long ago. I think James was playing in it, and he would get to a point where you could tell he was feeling the pace of play was perfect for him. And he was on the mark with his cue ball, with his spin, speed, everything was just perfect. And once he got a little bit faster than that, he'd miss an easy shot. One that was 100% makeable all the time for this guy. And so there's a point, and if you're a pool player, you understand this. There's a perfect height of pace of play for you, whatever that is. And it's different for every player. And if you can find it and you can get in it and stay in it, that's one of those things where they say, okay, I'm in dead stroke. That's got to do with your pace of play and how you feel in that pace. And that's, we saw that in this match. I loved it for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
Because they would get out of that. And then they'd go, okay, now what do I do? And they'd kind of search for it a little bit, get back into it. And then you'd see those runs, those 5, 6, 7, you know. And some runs were not necessarily table runs, but they were wins, you know, 9 in a row or whatever.
Yeah, what was the highest at the, maybe Mike,
7?
You know, was it 7? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was 7.
Which is,
but there were multiple 7 fives.
Yeah. Runs.
Yeah. And fours and fives, quite a few of them breaking runs. But there was, I think, nine games ago where Dennis had won 9 out of 11, I think, right, at one point?
Oh, yeah. There were multiple streaks like that. Right.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there was a time where I think Dennis was nearly down 20 games. I think he was it like 17, 18, something like that? I think the highest lead Dennis ever got was 5 or 6. Am I right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
I was very surprised he didn't sprint away at that point.
Yeah,
but it always seemed
it's a testament to Scott.
Every once in a while on one of the breaks, he lose the cue ball. Or just the luck of the break wasn't really going his way sometimes. He'd get a kiss and then cue ball. Yeah. He scratched more than Sky did.
Yeah.
In the whole
but
event.
That's cool. You know, you're gonna have those small mistakes that stop a run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess we can move on from there. I think we're all I wanna see it again. This isn't one of those matchups where you leave it saying, all right, I've had enough of this, I'm done with that. I wanna see more of Sky and Dennis. And I think they ended up getting the last number I saw was 380,000, but I heard that it did end up crossing the $500,000 mark of just money on the match. So, you know, can the losing side, can they come up with enough to make it happen again? Because it can't happen you can't run this back for $50,000. Can't do that. I mean, if you're going to run it again, it's got to be at or probably more than what it was before. Can they get to that?
You know, I was so serious about watching this match that on Friday afternoon, I told my wife for the next 3 nights she was going to have sex by herself.
Oh, Jesus. Welcome to the show, Rob.
Boom.
That's awesome. All right, with that, let's move on to the next thing on the docket. We're going to talk a little bit about the VG Battle of the Sexes because we're down to the playoffs now. And really, I guess the only thing I'm interested in is kind of your – I don't know if you've had the opportunity to watch any of it, Mike. I know you have, Rob. Mostly, I guess I'm just looking at your guys' idea on what's happening and how it's going as far as the ebbs and flows of it. Who do you think is coming in strong? Who do you think is coming – you know, who do you guys like in the playoffs? Who do you think has a good chance? What matchups are you looking to check out in the first round or, you know, in maybe later on in the round? Of course, the one that jumps to mind for me currently is if Kelly Fisher loses her first round match to Ina. Of course, Ina and Yearn having to play couples. That'd be kind of funny. But
Kelly's probably going to ruin that.
Kelly, I don't know. Kelly's...
I think they can
in the semifinals. Yes. Kelly, I don't know. I still think that, she's got a lot to learn. I'm not sure if she's quite ready for that level of performance yet. What do you think? You know, she only has 12 world titles. I think she's got a chance at it, you know, of course, sarcasm. Yeah. Kelly's a monster. So, what do you guys think? Where are you guys at for?
Rob? I would not bet on who's going to win this. Seriously. I mean, all the players in this, they can all play. I think the thing that I have a hard time wrapping my head around is the 9-ball versus the 10-ball. I look at these professional pool players and the women playing a different game than the men are playing. And I'm trying to grasp the relevance of that.
Well, here you go, Rob.
Is that really affecting the outcome, who's going to win this or not?
Here's the reason why the women.
I know why. Go ahead, Nate.
Can you name me two professional women's 10-ball events?
No, I understand why this is being done. So
yeah.
You know, because they only play 9-ball mostly. Yeah. The women
don't play 10-ball.
Yeah. Right.
So if we put everybody playing 10-ball, we're asking the women to play a game that they don't play that the men play mostly.
I understand.
So it comes down to they don't play.
I'm just trying to grasp how that is relative.
The relationship. I got you.
See what I'm saying? Yeah.
So Mike,
when it's all said and done, I'm going to look back at that and I'm going to say, was that relevant?
Yeah.
In the outcome, if say Ina wins this, or Margaret, or Kelly. You know, how is that going to be well, factored in?
I think
nine ball, not 10 ball, not because they're a better player or they played better or anything else. You know, they're guaranteed shooting at 8 balls or 7 balls after the break every time.
Yeah, practically. I think that this is the interesting part about it, is even with, you know, people saying like the women have an advantage, it's not fair for the men, or, you know, whatever it is. I mean, there's 7 men in the playoffs and there's 5 women, and all of the seated spots are taken by men, which means that there are 4 people that get a bye into the quarterfinals, and the other 8 are all battling to get to the quarterfinals. 5 of those 8 are women. So, I mean, there's been a lot of hoopla every now and then where people are like, oh, well, it's not fair for the men because the women have it too easy because they have the wing ball. Well, if it really was a huge deal, there'd at least be 1 woman seated, at least. And maybe we'd have a 6-6 split instead of a 7-5 split. So I think it's pretty close. Well, I mean, we'll see what happens the rest of the way, but I think it's been pretty close.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah. So what do you think, Mike?
I have not been watching. So maybe the biggest story that I'm curious about is how the kid's playing. What they call him, Samson?
Elijah Alvarez?
The Wonder Boy? Yeah. Yeah, Samson. Wonder Boy, that's it. I don't know where I got that. I mean, one of the pool players used to have a nickname of that. But yeah, Wonder, I should know that. It's a Prince bootleg. How's he playing?
Wonder Boy has the overall number 2 seed.
Okay.
So he is the overall number 2 seed. He had the second highest total racks ran, I think, in the entire event. So he's hitting them good, man. I'm telling you what, that kid might be somebody someday.
Imagine that, a Filipino playing well. Who's the number 1 seed?
Yearn Coplin.
Wow.
And nobody's ever heard of him. It's Ina's husband. His claim to fame is being Ina's husband. It's a funny story, actually. When Ina played in the VG, the VG9, I was talking to Yearn, and he's a bit of a tech guy like me. So we're kind of just talking. And so I'm like, so, I kind of just made like a little tiny joke, like, yeah, hey, so what's it like knowing that your woman or your wife is a better pool player than you? Because he said he had played a little bit in his past, and he's like, I beat up on her pretty good, you know, just kind of being nice about it. I'm like, oh, really? Oh, cool. So, you know, if you guys played a race to 9, what do you think the score would be? He's like, I don't know, maybe 9-3, 9-4, something like that. I'm like, what? I look up, he's a 780 Fargo.
Oh. Okay.
So, I mean,
how come you never heard of him?
Well, this is the funny part, right? How strong is Europe to where a 780 Fargo you've never even heard of? And he comes out and he beats people like Ivan Maluto and Tyler Steyer and, you know, Conrad Justicien and, you know, Miensko Fortunski, you know, all of these monster players, and never even heard of Yearn Coplin. And turns out he's your number 1 overall seed. Pretty crazy, right?
Nice.
There was talk a couple of years ago when the debate was who was going to make Team USA for Moscone Cup. And, you know, the thought was you could take the top 5 players from Europe, disqualify them, take the next 5, disqualify them, take the next 5, and that could be a winning Moscone Cup team.
So, yeah, I always like to do take the top 5 Europeans, disqualify them, take your next 5, randomly select one of them, take the next 5, randomly select them, take the next 5, randomly select one of them, take the next 5, randomly select one of them, and next thing you know, you're 30 deep and you randomly selected 5 players and they'd still probably win.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, you know, at least be competitive. But,
That would be accurate.
So, I guess we'll wrap up the discussion there. It was mostly just ebbs and flows. What do you guys thought about the overall event? And basically, I'm just looking for, you know, an ego boost. So thanks, guys. I found out that one person hates the rules and the other person doesn't watch. Great. Just kidding, of course. All right, so let's move on to...
I will mention commentating, though.
Oh, it's great. It's great,
The
right?
banter the banter between you and Jim and in these VG things is great.
Yeah, we just rip on each other. That's everybody. All we, do. We just sit there and rip on each other.
He's a crackpot all the way. I mean, goes right with your straight lace right out of the math prism. And then you got Jim. And you two guys
are, Do you realize, Rob, that both Jim and I are mathematicians?
I can believe that.
He has a degree in mathematics too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. Must be something about math majors and being really terrible commentators.
I don't know. How about Demetrius? Where does he fit in this? Because you and him are like on the same math wavelength.
I think it's a thought process.
These two guys start talking about odds. You know, the odds of this and this.
And Rob's eyes just go rolling into the back of his head.
777. You know, they can give it to you over the course of a year, you know.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to the big news, I would say, out of the industry. And this is clearly it was controversial because when Matchroom announced this, they announced that Shane was playing in the Whirlpool Masters. And they announced that Shane was playing in the Whirlpool Masters in a way of, what I'm going to say, attempting to extinguish the backlash they are going to get by excluding him from the World Cup of Pool. So let's start our discussion here. What do you think about the team of Sky Woodward and Billy Thorpe as U.S.'s representative in the World Cup of Pool and snubbing Shane Van Boning? Mike, what do you think?
I did find it amusing when the press release came out. It was kind of like, when your kids are coming to you trying to tell you that, they dropped something from the counter. It was like, but before I say anything, I want you to know that Shane's on this team, but he won't be playing in this one. We all knew there was going to be a time. There was eventually going to come a time when Shane Van Boning was not a lock for every match room or every major event.
Well, before you even,
the before question
you,
is,
before you even start, is Shane fallen off his level in any sort of way that justifies that, in your opinion?
No. And that was going to be where I continued, in that I don't think it's that time yet. I don't think Sky and Billy are two of the top three American players, in my opinion. And I'm sure there are people who would like to argue that. Right. But
I'll take Brendan,
I mean, there's no question that Shane is. It's tough because we haven't seen him. We haven't seen him jump into the challenge matches. Although, the idea of watching either him or Sky shave the other one's head really interests me.
Love it.
I just don't think it's time yet. But I understand. Matchroom is trying to broaden what people are seeing from the American pool players. They've got Chris in there. They had Tyler in there. They want, and I don't, I don't know Emily's mindset. I haven't asked her about this, but it seems to me the idea is let's show people that there's more than just Shane. And I don't know that that's meant to be a slight towards Shane in any way, but just watching the same players over and over again gets boring. And you think back to the WPBA when Belukis was the queen, every tournament was, who's she going to play in the finals? And, for Matchroom or think about AccuStats, they're always looking for matches from these tournaments. AccuStats has the international, and you look at some of the matches and you think, well, God, you picked Nate versus Rob to put on the screen on the stream. I don't understand that. You could have had Johnny and Rodney. And Pat's got to be thinking, yeah, that's just exactly what I wanted. Another Johnny and Rodney match. Matchroom's got to be saying, do we want Shane again? They're trying to build content that they can that they can promote and sell the game through.
And we've seen that. So the Sky and Shane show.
Yeah, that's I understand what they're doing.
Sky and Shane show. That's hard to say.
And let's see what happens. Sky and Shane, didn't they team up in Scotch at Moscone, and it was not exactly their best performance? you know, you never know what the dynamics are going to be between two players. Let's see what Billy and Sky do together.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. I like that philosophy.
Yeah.
See what happens.
I agree. I agree with it. And unfortunately, at the end of the day, the answer to all things in life is money. Every decision you'll ever find out all comes down to money. So the idea is, if they're going to change up the lineup, because I agree with you that they're, you know, we've seen the Sky and Shane show and we've seen what it does. The best we can do is second place, and it's not like they've had 3 years to figure this out. You know, they've been playing together for 6-7 years, I'm guessing, something like that. We've seen the Sky and Shane show. So then the question becomes then, if you're going to create a new lineup, who do you choose? You can't choose two new players. I don't think you can do that because the U.S. isn't deep enough. So if you get rid of Sky or you get rid of Shane, don't tell me that there's another player in the world more marketable than Shane right now. Or the last 10 years, maybe short of like three or four people. Maybe Josh Filler, maybe Jason Shaw, no one else. Don't tell me that there's somebody more marketable because you're wrong. You're just wrong. So then the idea is if you're going to start right there, the only other way that you can make Sky your pick is if you can market him as a package. You could do Shane and Billy. You could do Shane and Justin. Shane and Justin is going to be the best competing team that the U.S. has to offer.
That would be.
I think maybe even more than Sky and Shane. I think Shane and Justin is a potentially a better team because I think they would gel a little bit better maybe with their personalities. They're both kind of quiet, let's just get the job done kind of players. Do I think Justin is as good as Sky? No, I don't. I don't. But I do think that, in fact, I think, to be honest with you, as far as teams go, I think Shane and Justin would be the best team that we could offer up. To be honest, I think that this team right here is the second best, Billy and Sky. Now, if you look at their Moscone Cup record, it's not good. You would think that they would gel a little bit better together, but their win-loss record still isn't great. But the idea is they know how to communicate with each other. They've grown up playing against each other. They know how to communicate. They know what each player needs at the time, you know, to lift each other up or to keep each other going. And Shane is significantly more marketable, I think, than Sky at this point. But the package of the Mullet Twins or Mullet Brothers or whatever you want to call it, you know, it hasn't run its course yet. People are still eating it up. They still like it. Do I think that it works for me? No. Does it work for you guys? No. Does it work for a broad audience that may not be interested otherwise? They think it does, and they think it can. Will it? They'll find out. They're gonna give a chance. They're gonna find out, and if it doesn't work, I guarantee you, they will not be playing again next year. Matchroom is. In a lot of ways, their job is to create media hype. Their job is to create eyeballs. Their job is to create interest. And if nothing else, this created interest. You have a lot of people talking about Shane getting snubbed and, you know, why isn't Shane there? This is disrespectful to Shane. But what it does is it gets people talking about it. It gets interest. It gets people knowing the event is coming up, knowing that they're going to be able to see if it was a good idea, and you're going to get some eyeballs from it. So at the end of the day, the answer to all things is money. And Matchroom thinks that this is going to drive more interest, more revenue, more money because of this choice. And who in the world am I to tell Matchroom how to do their job? They're a hell of a lot better at it than any of us.
I know that I would pay Shane to take me lake trout fishing anytime.
So there's a question out there. Why doesn't the U.S. basically get two teams? The U.S. cannot get two teams. The only country, the way that this event is ran, the only country that gets two teams is the host country. And the host country is England or the U.K.
Yeah.
And so that's why they have two teams, which is Jason and Chris Melling and the Fishers, Kelly and Allison. So they are the only country in the world that gets two teams. So that's why there's no
two USA teams. So let's see here. Sarah Schmidt asks, do you think they did it solely for the media interest reasons? Solely, no. I wouldn't say solely. But like I said, I think we've seen the Sky and Shane show, and this is the next iteration of Team USA. And if it works, I guarantee you that they'll be back. If it doesn't work and they go 2-0 and they're not competitive, it's a single elimination. Let's say they lose 7-1 in their first match against, I don't know.
Well, and it's seeded, so they're going to play some team they're supposed to destroy.
Yeah, if they lose 7-2 against Chile or something like that, will they be back? No, no way. Matchroom is willing to take chances. Matchroom is not stupid. Matchroom is plenty good enough at what they do to know exactly what they're doing. They're going to give this a chance. It has the potential to be boom or bust for them. And a one-year track record of the world is not U.S. The USA is not the world. And if they lose the USA in the first round, the event's not over. Right, they have plenty more reach from around the world. That would they like to have the U.S.? Yes, it's probably the biggest market that they're hitting, or at least trying to expand into. But they don't need us to have a successful event, and I think it's a boom or bust. Try it out, see what happens. So,
you know what I like about this pairing is, I'll call it the fire aspect, potential for adrenaline. To be
they're
part
both,
of the
yeah they're both very fiery players
yes
they're both when young. they're winning they're very okay. fiery players,
but yes, they're very fiery, and I think from a media perspective, you want to see emotion when you see pool players. You don't get that a lot.
It sells.
Europeans are, like a lot of the Asians, very unemotional when they play.
That's why they
play so well,
and that's why Jason and Joshua are so beloved, we'll say, in Europe.
Exactly. So you're fighting a sword that's dull on both sides when you want to try to pair these folks up like that. You know, the U.S. we're all about emotion here. The other countries that have way far more better pool players, they're all about the game.
Our heroes of the last 20 years have all been very
martial arts
players
of the game. And the Filipinos all about the dedication to you, this is your job kind of thing. And you've got, you know, things happening in these other countries where in the United States, it was a game. This is just a game.
Yeah.
And so that might work for them with this pairing.
Yeah.
So I hope it does.
Yeah.
Hope it does for pool.
And so for the Whirlpool Masters, Shane and Sky were both announced. Was Billy announced?
I don't think he's been announced.
And I'm not sure either. I'm gonna look that up really quick because YOLO. And this is a very weird it's a very weird thing if there's one thing that bothers me a little bit, it's how willing they are to put Billy on the front of their everything. So if you open up matchroompool.com, you have David Al-Kaidi when he won the World Pool Masters, and you have Billy Thorpe, and you have Jeffrey DeLuna. Why those three players are on the front page, it's a little confusing to me. But what do I know?
I've got the list of players here. Al-Kaidi, DeLuna, Gorst, Pagulayan, Shane, Albin, Oy, Woodward, Shaw, Filler, and Melling so far.
At what point in time are we going to stop allowing Alex into these events?
Never, hopefully.
When was the last time Alex has done anything in one of these events? It's like the Earl question, right? And don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to disrespect Alex in any sort of way, but when was the last time that Alex Pagulayan did something big in a matchroom event?
I'm not going to answer your question with a date, but I'm going to answer it with he's marketable as hell.
He is.
And yeah. I do believe so. And
is he marketable if he's out in the first round?
He's not going to be out in the first round. Well, actually, you know, with Alex, you never know what you're going to get. I mean, if Alex won the event, I would not be floored. I mean, sure, Alex is not a favorite against Fedor right now, but Alex, he's one of those players you never know how well he's going to play. I mean, he's capable of doing just about anything.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. You put Efren in the event. If Efren wins the event, I'm going to be floored. If Bustamante wins the event, I'm going to be floored. If Earl wins the event, I'm going to be floored. I'm not going to be blown away if Alex wins it.
Yeah. It's been a long time since I've seen Alex at the top of an event that had a real field in it. A long time.
I don't know, years.
Three, four, five years.
I'm with you on that.
I mean, don't get me wrong. He's one of the most likable pool players I've ever actually seen in the game. I mean, his fun loving goofy attitude towards the game is it's infectious. But is the Naoki Oi Apple Pen or TT tournament is that the reason why he's getting invited to these events? Is Alex's likability the reason he's getting invited to these events? Because he's not doing it on the table.
For sure.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, and I hate to think about it.
Both. I mean, he's still capable, like you say, Mike, at any time of playing wonderful pool. But, yeah, it's his personality.
My question isn't can he reach the high highs that he used to reach. It's can he do it for the course of a pool tournament to justify him being there? Because Johnny Archer could get thrown in there, too, and he could catch a gear for one match, too. And knock off a.
Yeah, but he's not going to win it.
No,
and that's exactly where I look at Alex right now with the resume that I've seen from him in the last 4 years. I haven't seen anything that justified his spot on this. Is he? Let's see. Where did you say the players? Here we go. So what I'm not seeing on here, I'm not seeing Eklanti Kachi. Is he more deserving than Eklanti Kachi?
No, not at all. No, Kachi should be there. Kazakis should be there.
Kazakis. Of course, there's 4, 8. There's 11 players right now. And how many total are there for this event? I think is there 20? There's buys for 4 people.
32? Or are there buys? Okay,
yeah,
so
there's buys.
28?
Maybe 28. So maybe they get in still. Who knows? I just think that. Who knows? At the end of the day, who knows?
24.
So there's 4, 8. There's 11 right now. So they're still doubling the field. Okay. Maybe if you're going to have 24, I'm perfectly okay with Alex Pagulayan being one of them. I don't think that he can win two matches. I think that he maybe he can win an opening round. I don't think he can win two. Oh, Kelly Fisher is even. Kelly Fisher's playing.
I was going to say,
and she's not on here.
Traditionally, you have a couple ladies playing.
It'd be interesting. I know Kelly Fisher's playing because I've seen. Well, she's on the poster. Why wouldn't she be playing if she's on the poster? Seems like a really weird decision for Matchroom to do to put her on the poster of this year's event and not having her play it. So, all right, let's move on to. I guess are we all through the discussion on the World Cup of Pool, the Shane and Sky thing, and what we think about the event as a whole?
I think so. It's always been a marquee event.
I'm looking forward to it. I love this event. Besides the Moscone Cup, this is my favorite event. This is my favorite event of the year.
It's right up there with the U.S. Open and the International. I mean, I realize it's an invitational field, but I think winning this is right there. It's going to go on your resume if you win it.
The Masters in Pool is also an invitational field, and that's maybe the most prestigious event in golf. Right?
Yes.
So,
I'm not a golfer.
Yeah. I would say the Masters is probably the most
poor.
Well, it's certainly one of the majors. I think it's more I would say it's significantly more prestigious than the Players or the British Open. Maybe less than the US, but neither here nor there. All right. Let's move on to the last event we're going to talk about. Tip, Chip, and Tony are going to be running it back. Tony was giving 9-8 the first time, and now they're playing even, and they're playing in Tony's home room. So either of you want to take it on first, or do you want me to?
When is this going to be, Nate?
Well, I'm gonna have to.
When is this coming?
Well, I'm gonna have to find that one out, but can look it up.
Like mid-May.
I think. Something like
who
that.
Who was the producer for this?
This is Omega Billiards.
Omega.
Again. Yep. This is Omega Billiards. Omega. Basically, Mike Ong. Is that right? Is it Ong?
I think it's Wang.
Mike Wang.
I could be wrong.
This guy's doing so much for pool. It's gross. I mean, this guy is like the biggest matchups, the most sought after matchups for, you know, I still hate the idea that we're charging pay-per-view for a game that nobody wants to watch to begin with. That just bothers the hell out of me. But regardless, we're getting the matchups that we want to see. And, you know, they're good. So this is May 14th, 15th, and 16th. So that actually coincides, I think, with the World Cup of Pool, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, I think it does.
Yeah, the 14th. Yeah, the May 9th through the 14th. So the last day they're going to be started. But, yeah, this is in the UK, so it doesn't really matter because this is going to be in the afternoon, and that's going to be done at probably noon, something like that.
Completely different audiences, too.
Yeah, certainly. Now, there's plenty of overlap, but, yeah, I know what you're saying.
Sure.
Yeah. So, so this is going to be played the 14th, 15th, and 16th. At 6 p.m. Every day, race to 9 every single day, race to 27 overall, playing even. And playing even is in red bold. So, and this is, they are dubbing this America's Best One Pocket Player title. So not only are they putting 50,000 in the middle, which I think is low. I know Tony Choen's side is completely wide open. He'll bet whatever he can get on it on himself. So they'll be, I'm guessing, well over $100,000 in on this by the end of this. But they are dubbing this as the America's Best One Pocket Player title. I want to start really quickly here. Is that true? Mike, what do you think? Do you think that this really is America's Best?
Half of it is. And I say that without a lot of One Pocket knowledge. I mean, I realize it's blasphemous to live in Arizona and not know what I'm talking about when it comes to One Pocket, but I really don't. You know, Tony was, going back to that whole top three equation, Tony was one of the top three One Pocket players alive for a number of years. And all of a sudden, it seems like One Pocket has shifted in a different direction, and strategy is different, and the players that we expect to be in the forefront of the game just aren't. Scott kind of disappeared, and I understand he got sidetracked with life, but I mean, I know who Chip Compton is, but how is he competing heads up with one of the top three players alive? I mean, One Pocket, it seems to me the kind of game, you know, nine ball, okay, I get it. You go in a streak, you know, there was the year that Mika was winning everything. There was a period of time where Darren was winning everything, where Jason was winning everything. One Pocket seems different. One Pocket is so much more in your mind that in my mind, it seems like the top players should remain the top players for a longer period of time. And again, I'm just showing my lack of knowledge about One Pocket, though.
Rob, do you have anything?
Well, I think you saw that in history of the game. I think you got players that were at the best at One Pocket for 20 years, you know, 10, 20 years at a time. Some of the old timers that they're still playing, but they're not competitive anymore. It's a game I think is starting to be more accepted in just your run-of-the-mill pool halls. You see it now more. I know last time I was in Arizona, one of the bigger pool halls in Phoenix, there was at least 5-6 One Pocket matches going on every single night. If you want One Pocket action, you could go in this place and get it at any level. You could play. You didn't 20 years ago. You didn't see that. It was everybody's playing nine ball and not very much 10 ball even, but once in a while. Now it's actually catching on as interest, and even locally at the amateur level. I'll get calls every once in a while from friends, hey, you want to come over to my house and play some One Pocket with me? And I never used to get that call. I wouldn't expect that call 20 years ago. So the game is the awareness of One Pocket is starting to catch its own gear, I think, in a way. I saw Chip Compton 15 years ago in Vegas doing reverse five railers on a bar table with the cue ball and kicking at balls. And I was just, my mouth dropped open. Mm-hmm. I went, this guy knows what he's doing. So, I mean, he's been around for a while, hasn't been on the radar, you know, real high until this Tony matchups and things. They got a little history. But.
Well, I'll tell you what, Chip is, Chip has been on a heater for about the last year and a half now to where, as far as the gambling, kind of the American gambler, the Tonys, the Scotts, the Chips, the, you know, the Joey Grays, the Josh Roberts, stuff like that, the kind of Joey, even Jeremy Jones to a lesser degree, you know, the kind of American gambling type of player, I don't take anybody over Chip right now. I don't, he's on a different level. And maybe if you want to say Billy Thorpe is one of those American style gamblers, you know, then I would have a discussion with it. I'd take Billy first, but, I kind of look at Billy and Sky as moving on from that and kind of being a tournament playing player who does some gambling on the side. But, anyways, I guess going back to this discussion of the actual event, I'm done betting against Chip Compton. I've bet against him twice with Roberto. I bet against him when he was getting 9-8 for Tony in the last One Pocket matchup and then beat him by 5. I'm done betting against Chip Compton. Chip Compton is the best the U.S. has to offer. I love Tony, and I think he's a great ambassador for this game. He's, you know, I wish he'd get a little bit more into tournament play and actually representing the sport as a whole from a tournament aspect, because I think he's got the potential to really actually be an influential player in that market. But I'm done betting against Chip. The guy just wins every. The guy's a locksmith. Whenever he gets his money in the middle, he knows he's going to win, and he does. It's been so long since he's lost one of these.
You guys, and Nate, you two here. Do you think that the advantage in this matchup will go to the player that knows more about the game they're playing, or the player that can pocket balls better?
I don't think that either one of these players has significantly more knowledge than the other. I think they both know the game inside and out.
Who can pocket the balls better then? You got an open rack. Who's going to run out more times in one pocket?
See, this is what burns me every single time. Is the answer to that is Tony? The answer to that is absolutely Tony. But Chip has Chip has this amazing way of just manipulating these racks into never making it a runout game and just grinding and grinding and grinding your opponents down. It's not entertaining One Pocket. In fact, most of the time I just turn it off after about 4 games, because the 4 games last 4 hours and it's, you know, you spend 13 innings basically doing absolutely nothing but putting the balls around. It's brutally it's not watchable. And somebody who watches, you know, One Pocket religiously, it's not watchable pool. Watching Roberto Gomez and Chip Compton was like, I'd rather put my pool cue up to my forehead the long ways and sprint into a brick wall than watch that for 1 hour. It was awful. It was absolutely terrible.
Pretty tough when you turn the stream off and the score is 5-2, and 30 minutes later you turn it back on and it's 6-4.
Yes, it's brutal.
In the same game.
but what it is effective. I mean, Chip has more patience than anybody else in the world. And he knows how to play that game. He knows how to slow it down. He knows how to drag it out. And he knows how to grind you into the dirt. And he's very, very good at doing it. I'm done betting against him. I think Chip is the future. I think Chip wins this. Again, I know he's playing in Tony's at Buffalo's at his home pool room. And he's playing without the spot of 9-8. And, you know, he needed all of that to win by 5 games. And now he's playing away from home and without a spot. Don't care. I don't care. Chip. I'm done betting against Chip. That guy's cost me so much damn money in the last year. I'm done. I refuse to take anybody else. If Chip's name is there, I don't care if he's playing against Dennis right now. I'm either not betting or I'm betting on Chip. So there it is. I think this is perfectly marketed. I think these are the two best. These are the only two people that have a claim. Scott just lost to Tony last week. So a couple months ago. Scott just lost to Tony. It was closer than I thought it was going to be, but he lost and there's nobody else. Maybe you could throw like a Danny, Justin Hall.
I was trying to think. Cliff Joyner. Well, that's who I was trying to think of. What old-time player was. He was the best one-pocket player in the United States for 20 years.
Yeah. Maybe you could throw Justin Hall in there. Maybe you could throw Billy Thorpe in there as like being potentially better than Tip or Chip or Tony. But I think this is it. I'd love to see the winner take on Justin Hall or Billy Thorpe and just keep the streak going just so we have some more matches. But I don't think they'll take it. I think this is it. I think these are the two players. And I think that the title of this is going to be perfect. Whoever wins it is, in my eyes, the best player in the U.S., at least for the foreseeable future. So, I guess...
all in favor, say
aye. Aye. So, we're not going to talk in depth about it, but I wanted to just talk about it in passing because, it's not for a couple weeks still, so... the only thing I want to do now before we close it out is let's give World Cup a pool picks on who we think is going to win. Cause the next time we do one of these, we might have a different cast. So let's get everybody on the record. What do you guys think?
I got to look at the teams
and I could go through. I could go through a couple of them right now. Teams. So, Albania, we have Eklanti Kaçi and Bizarre Spehula, something like that. Australia, we have Justin Sansage and Ivan Lee. Austria, Albin Ocean, Mario He. Belgium is Sergei Das and Kevin Lanois. Bosnia, and I don't even know. Skipping. Canada, Alex Pegulai and John Moore. I'm just going to go through the highlights. Let's see here. Germany is Joshua Filler and Christoph Rentzes. We have Petri Mikkonen and Kasper Matikainen for Finland. That's a good team. Jason Shaw, Chris Melling, Nick Malai, and Alex Kazakis for Greece. That's a great team. Nayuki Oi and Masato Yoshioka. Philippines, Roberto Gomez, Jeffrey DeLuna. That's a terrible team. Of all the Filipino players that you can have, that's about as bad as you can get, seemingly. And not even trying to disrespect those two. I mean, there's got to be 10 players in the Philippines that are better than Roberto Gomez.
You're just holding that championship league shot against him.
A little bit. No, I mean,
I wonder what kind of damage that's going to do to his confidence long term. I mean, that's a long conversation that we don't need to get into.
Yeah, I mean, spare me. When you can have Anton Raga and Carlo Beato as a team. And neither one of them get a, you know, Dennis or Coyo, you can have in there. You know, there's five players that you could throw in there that, you know, Roberto wouldn't play him with the six. I don't know.
Pretty much.
I'll start this off because my friend is playing and I'm picking him. I think that Poland is going to come out. They're going to come out firing. I think Miansko Fortunski and Wojtek Szewczyk are going to be your World Cup pool champions. There's my pick. And probably nobody's even heard of Wojtek, but he did play in this event in 2014, I want to say. And they got runner-up when he was maybe 18 or 19 years old. So he's back for the second attempt. He hasn't played since, but yeah, they got second place. And go Wojtek, so... I'm saying Poland is my winner.
Okay. You're kind of going out on a limb there.
Absolutely. What do you think?
I think it's going to be hard to bet against Austria. If you were giving me two teams, I would take Austria and England A almost against the field.
Wow. Can I take that? Can we take that for something? Doesn't have to be money, but I want some sort of bet on this.
You give me those two, and you can have Poland and any other team you want.
No, come on. You said the field. I would take Poland. I would take Poland and Spain before those two, I think.
Okay.
I like the Austria pick, but I don't think that Jason and Chris Melling will be strangling each other by the end of day two.
I think Melling is continuing to play. He's not, you know, he's past the whole COVID quarantine social distancing thing. I mean, he's out there playing any opportunity he gets, and I think he's, I'm not going to say he's at the top of his game, but I'm going to say he's up there somewhere. And Jason doesn't know how to miss. He's never known how to miss.
Right.
You know, the more pressure's on him, the better he's going to perform.
Yeah.
So I would take those two teams for different reasons. You know, I think Albin and Mario just fit together as a team so well.
They win it all the time, so.
Yeah, and they have so much experience. So, yeah, those are my two picks. And really, honestly, I don't think it's fair because I'm not going out on a limb with them.
Yeah. Rob, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Sean Melling. I played Chris Melling one time in a bar table nine ball tournament out in Vegas. So I got to see him close up and personal. And, of course, I was obviously impressed with his game at that point. And this was a few years back. And it just – they're stars. I mean, all the guys in this whole event are stars. But I'm going to go with them too. I'm not sure how they'll do together. But I think they'll feed off each other.
Well, they're not going to lack energy, will they?
No, I don't think it's going to be north and north. I think it's north and south. I think they're going to, I think they're going to come together and play well together. And because they're both just so talented.
Yeah.
Although I'm not saying nobody else is talented in this group, but I kind of lean in toward that way. I like the Austrians, yes. There's no question. Like the German team, I like the Spanish team. A lot of teams I like.
But, there's a half a dozen teams that could win it and not surprise you.
Yeah.
Yeah. For sure.
I think I would say the only thing that bothers me is a lot of these countries that you're seeing, if you don't have the best player in the country, like the top two, you have like one in three, right? I mean, there's a couple you can say like, all right, maybe Poland has a better player, or maybe Darren Appleton's better than Chris Melling at this point. Maybe you have, you know, maybe Ralf Suke is still the second best German. But no matter what, you have the first or second best player in a country. And the U.S. does not have that. Like, we don't have that. We're not putting out our best team. And that does bother me a little bit, that these other countries are getting their best representatives, and the U.S. has to play with what they're given. But it is what it is. I mean, Sky is certainly a top three player in the U.S. It's, you know, I think Shane's on an island, and then it's, you know, Justin Bergman or it's Sky Woodward. And then I would say Billy fits comfortably into the next the group, the kind of tier three players with, you know, himself and Mike DeShane. He's back playing again. So, you know, players like that, even, you know, Tyler to a lesser degree, depending on the game. But, yeah. I just think it's – we shouldn't have to go three levels deep with our players when the other countries are picking the top two or three, which is a bummer. But I guess it is what it is.
Did the Russian team surprise you? Fedor and Sergey?
Yeah, a big time. I don't know who Sergey is. I mean, I don't know the reasoning behind it. I'm assuming that there's something behind it. I just don't know what. I mean, is Sergey significantly better than, significantly worse than Ruslan? Yeah, probably not. But I mean, Ruslan is number two. Certainly he's number
Absolutely.
Two. So they at least got one right. And if you get one right.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, If you get one right and you're picking the player that you want to play with, that person's... So I know that that's happened a few times where they basically pick one player and that player gets to pick who their partner is. That happened for years and years and years and years with Jason Shaw when he was playing for Scotland and not the UK. They basically just said, all right, Jason, pick your partner, and this is your partner. Did that happen with Fedor? I don't know. Did it happen with Joshua Filler? I have it on a decent authority that it did happen with that.
Wouldn't be surprised.
Yep. So who knows? You know, maybe Fedor thinks that he gels better with this player than with Ruslan. Who knows? So.
Do you think they were asked?
No.
If one of the players, obviously, on each one of these teams is the best player, do you think they were asked?
No. Wait, are you talking about like
yes.
Josh?
Yes.
You're talking about Joshua Filler? Like, was he asked who his partner should be? Sure. Oh, yeah, yes. That's what I'm saying.
Who could you play with for a partner?
Yes, that's, yes.
I'd be willing to bet dollars to donuts that they were at least given the ability to veto certain players.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, I agree. All right, well, I guess let's wrap this up, our discussion right there. We're at about our normal amount of time, and we're out of topics, so I will say...
No, wait. No, don't go off yet. I got two things real quick.
Okay, go ahead.
Don't forget Billy and Sky this weekend. They've got a
it's an
challenge
exhibition.
Match.
It's an exhibition. Yep.
Yeah, it's an exhibition. More importantly, I don't know, Nate, if you're even old enough to remember this. Rob, you remember back when the Super Bowl was going on and they were trying to reach somebody and they announced during the Super Bowl that they were trying to reach like one person in the audience and they didn't know how to? This was years and years and years ago. So I'm going to do something similar. Josh Roberts, Danny Olson, please reach out to the BCA. Reach out to Shane Tyree over at the BCA. If you can't reach out to him, send me a message. The BCA is trying to reach both of these players. I sent out a message to Danny earlier today. So Danny Olson, Josh Roberts, if somebody knows how to reach them, ask them to reach out to Shane over at the BCA, or I can put them in touch with him. That's all I got.
All right. Well, there we go. Now I can close it out, right?
There we go.
Great. All right, guys. Thanks again for joining me. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in, sharing, doing whatever you guys have done along the way. Rob is going to show you his great Manscaped products.
And this is the Crop Reviver Refreshing Ball Toner with active pH control.
Do you even know what any of that means?
Yes, it's very similar to the ball deodorant. And this is also a crop preserver. And it's
got to preserve that crop.
Anti-chafing with also active pH control.
Again, do you know what any of that means?
Of course I do. I've researched this, and your balls will thank you.
So there you go. Thanks, Manscaped. You are the best sponsor we had for 5 days. It was great.
Bzzz. With a light.
There it is.
In case you can't find your face.
Yes, that's why.
Well, I don't know if we're thinking about face here.
I use it on my face.
Okay.
I might be the only person, though. All right.
I've obviously used it somewhere.
And with that, we're tuning up. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in, sharing, and doing all that good stuff.
Thanks, everybody.
Yep. Talk to you
later. See you next time. I wanna marry you. Don't talk back. Right there, get pushed aside. Cause right then, I realized that she's a girl that I always wanted. All those seasons that just didn't mean it.
Hey, everyone. Thanks again for listening. If you've liked what you've heard and you want to contribute to the future content that will be made, consider joining the podcast's Patreon at www.patreon.com/queueitup. Becoming a Patreon of the podcast will help to create all of the future content that the podcast will have. Special shout out to Dave Peters, Aaron Taylor, Pete Silsby, Morgan Lupton, Ben Young, Robert Miller, Andy Morse, and Bill Pelham for your generous contributions to the podcast's Patreon. If you ever need any more information on what the Patreon system is or how you can contribute outside of the Patreon, please reach out to the podcast or Nate himself. If you would like to contribute to the podcast for free, consider sharing any podcasts or the podcast page on Facebook itself. Also, leaving a review and a rating if you listen through iTunes. It helps others find the podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back soon with another episode of the Cue It Up podcast.